You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder. Hi, Dr. Emder.
Hello, and good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm healing. I'm recovering.
You are healing. Are we talking about your back or your cold? Because I know this is radio, so you can avoid TV, but you look like maybe you're sick a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little bit under the weather. I think I got the viral bug, so to speak, from one of our guests. I won't mention that was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Who was in here coughing. I'm not going to talk about that, but I'm going to talk about my back. A month ago, I was standing, during our radio recording, because I had actually herniated my L3, L4 disc. And I've been able to heal it without surgery, which is a big...
Very impressive.
Yeah. And I've done a lot of different things. And probably the main thing may be sleep. I've been getting a lot of sleep.
Now, I would think that would be a painful, because you're sleeping on your back, right? And if your back is having issues, does that rest it more? How is that?
It was painful to sleep. So, my doctor put me on some medications, which kind of knocked me out.
Nice.
But the important thing is I slept. And I also took off, a couple weekends, and I didn't work my normal crazy 15-hour schedule. So, there's a lot of things that happen at night that helps your body heal itself. Like you release a lot of hormones like melatonin and growth hormone, which are which can heal the body.
You don't release them during the day?
No, there's something called diurnal variation, where things are being released at different times of the day. And it just so happens at night, when you think you're not very active, your body actually is very active metabolically and hormonally. So, if you don't get your 8 to 10 hours of sleep, you're kind of cheating yourself of an opportunity to, heal yourself.
Oh, interesting. Because I know there are people out there that say they don't need sleep.
Right.
Like there are certain professional athletes or the president of the United States. I don't know. Right.
So I'm one of these people that does not need a lot of sleep, theoretically.
What is a lot of sleep to you?
More than 6 hours.
Okay.
And I think sleep is kind of a range. Some people need 6. Some people need 8.
I don't
function
on less than 6.
Some people need 10. So I can function on 5 to 6. But I guess the question is it healthy? Probably the answer is no. Okay. And so one of the things I've been doing to heal myself, heal my back, is I've been getting more sleep and more restful sleep.
Nice.
And as we're going to be talking about today, we have Dr. David Slyer on the show, who's an expert on behavioral medicine and sleep.
Yeah. Okay. So the show is very exciting because I mean, in kind of looking over some information, it's almost a combination of depression, stress, lack of sleep, leading to insomnia. This stuff is all tied together. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so when I say I cheated, I'm not treating myself. So I went to a physician. So I have a whole cadre of physicians that I use to take care of myself.
Well, the best.
And we're going to have Dr. Rahati on the show in a week or two, who's a pain specialist. Mm-hmm. And he put me on a medication called Lyrica, which is for pain, neuropathic pain. And I just take it at night. And I'm such a lightweight when it comes to drugs, it totally knocks me out. So I was able to even though I had the pain, I was able to sleep through the pain.
That's pretty good. Dr. Hadi, not to cut you off, but he also deals with epidurals, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So, I've got more questions on that one, too.
Right. Well, actually, besides putting me on some great medications, he also did an epidural on myself.
Was that?
And he said there's two ways we could do it. So let me ask you what you would do.
Okay.
He says, you could come into the suite, the procedure suite, and we can just do it, and you'd be able to go right back to work.
Okay.
Or we can give you a little bit of sedation where we put you in a twilight sleep and you don't feel anything.
Okay.
I took the latter.
I would totally do the latter.
Yeah. So I really didn't, I'm a lightweight when it comes to drugs. So I took my epidural with something called a Versed, which is a short acting like a Valium medication.
Okay.
And I was 4 sheets to the wind. I don't remember a thing. I woke up, I still had a little bit of discomfort, but over the course of a week between the rest and the epidural injection and taking, the pain medications at night, you know, I was able to heal myself without going for surgery. And,
right.
You know, I think over 50% of the time when you blow out a disc, you can avoid surgery if, you know, if you use common sense, see the right doctors and rest.
Hmm. Well done.
But I did other stuff too.
What did you do?
So my brother-in-law wanted me to get on a plane and fly
this
to...
This is after your back is healed? Because I know you were supposed to go on a plane with Mrs. Emder.
Yeah, that
somewhere
was
back and you couldn't, you couldn't do it.
Yeah,
that was the day you were standing.
Yeah, we canceled that. But
sure, okay.
He had recommended a form of therapy that's usually done by chiropractors called the decompression,
okay.
Where they put you on a table and I believe they use weights to kind of stretch you a little bit and, you know, take some pressure off the disc.
Okay.
And I actually went...
they pull you?
It actually pulls you, yeah.
Okay. Did you get taller?
Well, I went to see the chiropractor, and he said, "You know, you're doing so well. I'm not going to use this form of therapy."
No kidding.
Yeah, you
went all the way out there.
Actually, it was right here in La Jolla. I went to see the running doctor,
okay.
And we will have him on the show. So that's a good thing about your body breaking down. It adds more people that way. We can add to the show as I find what's the matter with my body.
Oh, that's very true.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy about being able to sit here and, you know, be pretty much pain free.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
That's
so
very cool.
I understand you have a little weight gain going on.
Stop. That makes it sound like I didn't tell you that ahead of time. Like you're looking
I would not know it. I mean, I think you look absolutely marvelous.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So I am now 13 weeks pregnant. On Tuesday, it'll be 14. So that's like the second trimester thing. And you know, as like a first time mom, I'm doing all the research, reading the books that you're supposed to read and you know, the internet and chat rooms and things. And at this point, I'm supposed to have gained about 5 pounds.
Okay.
I have gained 15. So that really, it hurt my feelings this morning.
Did you speak to your gynecologist?
No, I didn't. I go in and see her next week, so I'll probably mention it. But I mean, it comes down to the fact that as a California girl, you're just raised to watch what you eat constantly.
Right.
You know, so I mean, like I wake up in the morning, go to the gym before I leave the house, after the gym, like after I get home and change and everything, I have a protein shake. That's my breakfast.
That's
you know,
great.
Then I'll have like a small salad for lunch. And then I have like a piece of chicken and some vegetables for dinner. But that's all I would eat, you know, constantly,
yeah.
Especially leading up to the wedding and stuff. So now that there's a baby, I'm eating more consistently, you know, like I'll wake up in the morning and have some, you know, have some fruit, maybe some nuts, and then I'll go.
That's smart. That's what
it is, definitely.
Supposed to graze throughout the day was what we heard.
Right. And then I'll have like a piece of toast, and then maybe I'll have that protein shake, and then, you know, which the doctor said I could have, and then I'll have like a chicken salad for lunch, and then dinner I might have a salad and, you know, like maybe even a piece of pizza or something. So I've obviously increased my calorie intake. By, you know, naturally, because it's healthy. So
where'd you get this 5 pound weight gain? I mean, is
online?
Yeah, I wouldn't go.
Well, online
that.
And like, and the books like What to Expect When You're Expecting and
yeah.
That type of thing. But so the thing is this, I have been blessed, like totally. It's been a godsend that I have not been sick. I haven't gotten morning sickness. And I think it is because I have been so active, like leading a couple months before I got pregnant. We're at the gym every day running, you know, doing, you know, core exercises and those types of things and just eating really healthy. So, you know, once you get pregnant, I think it just kind of falls in line that I continued that. So I was able to continue to go to the gym. Obviously, I toned things down a little bit. But then there were a couple of days where I didn't go because like my husband got sick or something. So we just decided not to go. And then I kind of started to feel a little wheezy. So I thought, oh, gosh, maybe the gym is really keeping me healthy. You know,
it definitely is.
Yeah. So I'm like regularly doing that and then, you know, eating healthy. So I think all that played a big role in it. We'll see, like, come number two, if I, like, continue this regimen and I'm vomiting every day, then obviously it didn't, but...
No, I think you're wired to have babies.
Yeah, I mean, I know. Hips and all.
Yeah,
I'm just... So,
yeah, that's that good Italian blood.
I mean,
hopefully this is the first of many.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, so...
We've got to get through this, but at the same time, so I had... And... I had my first, our first like big ultrasound, you know, it's amazing what they can do with these 3D, 4D things now, but, and they checked for everything. I think it was the nucleal translucency screening and the baby's healthy.
Sweet.
Healthy. And 60% chance it's a girl. 60% is really not saying much because that's a step up from like, it could go either way, you know.
So I like the latest thing is I think to have ultrasound parties where you have all your family members come when they actually
do that,
and they you know bring balloons and so are you going to do that?
No, absolutely not, because that's just not my style. Not to offend anybody, but I'm all into like healthy, good girl, boy. All right, now let's decorate the nursery.
So some
get going.
You know, some couples do not even want to know the sex.
I know, which I don't understand. I think I offended somebody the other day that told me, she was like, you're going to find out? And I said, of course I'm going to find out. I'm not strange, you know? And then she's like, so many people don't. We didn't. And I thought, oh my gosh, I offended her. I'm so sorry. But I want to know. I'm a planner. A-type personality. I need to know. I need to know what color the room's going to be.
Well, when I was an intern, I had to deliver a baby in a snowstorm, and then my attending physician never got into the hospital, so I had to deliver this myself.
Oh my gosh. And as a pulmonologist, love it.
Well, no, I was just, you know, it was my first year out of medical school.
Okay.
I delivered the baby. Everything went fine. I had a medical student with me who like kept dropping all the prep packages, so there was like mountains of paper all over the place.
That made him feel confident.
So anyway, the mother said, well, what's the baby? And I just made something up. I said, it's, you know, it's a girl, but... And I didn't even look, you know, because I was so nervous. And then she picks up the baby. She goes, it's a boy. She goes, I really wanted a boy. I love you. I said, oh, yeah, I was just joking. So, you know, you don't want me delivering your baby.
Oh, Dr. Emder.
These things come back from the past.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm sure as my pregnancy goes on, you'll be able to relive a few more of those moments.
Yeah, you don't want to hear some of these stories.
No.
Inner city Detroit.
I don't. I'm excited for our conversation in a couple weeks about an epidural. But today... Our show is very exciting. So, audience out there, stay with us. We will be right back talking about some amazing things, especially if you've got any sleep issues, stress, maybe a little depression. We will be right back to answer all the questions you might have.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest-rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who's board certified in internal medicine, pulmonary medicine, with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder. And we have an amazing show today. So, Dr. Emder, I'm going to pass it over to you because Dr. Slayer is actually a good friend of yours.
Yeah,
too,
he's
right?
a personal so, friend, and yeah. I've been... he's actually done some amazing presentations about his family members, which are Holocaust survivors out of Holland. Recently had a seminar at UCSD. But David Slayer is did his undergraduate training at the University of Southern Florida. Then he went to the State University of West Georgia and has a master's in psychology. Chapman University, where he is an educational specialist with a master's in education. He has a PhD in the counseling from San Francisco. And he's a fellow and an American Academy of and experts in traumatic stress, certified in behavioral sleep medicine, and is one of, I think, maybe 400 board-certified sleep specialists in the whole country. So, David, welcome to the show.
Well, you know, thank you very much. I really have been looking forward to being here. I very much appreciate the really opportunity to talk about sleep and depression today with our audience.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on. We're, you know, the cool part about this show, about San Diego really in general, is we find out we have these amazing assets in doctors right here in our backyard. Like, as you're saying, there are only about 400 board certified in the country.
Right.
There, Dr. Slayer, you had said there's really only four in San Diego and only one that's practicing, right?
One in private practice.
And that's you. So that's, really, that's to have access to this is a, you know, it's really an honor on our end to be able to just pick your brain.
Well,
you
know, not mine, only that. Mine as well.
Yeah.
Not only that, with his certification in an expert in traumatic stress, I think you developed the post-traumatic stress treatment center with the Balboa Naval Hospital over the last 10 years.
Yes, I was selected as the sole clinical psychologist at the Deployment Health Center, Military Health Center, with at the Naval Medical Center San Diego, which is the largest naval medical center in the world. And what I did was I started the stress, combat stress, PTSD programs. I provided all of the evidence-based treatments there, as well as developed the set in that center. And the other thing that I did was I was one of the first persons actually to recognize the sleep problems with folks returning from deployment. Because if you don't sleep well, you're not going to cognitively or emotionally process what you would get in good treatment for stress or PTSD. You're not awake enough to remember, you know, what went on. So I identified that and developed a number of sleep treatments, both individually and group. And so hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of folks there. It was my privilege to do so. I happen to be a combat Marine Corps veteran.
That's the cool part, that they can relate to you. You can relate to them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I figure, you know, I'm sure some of our audience members has a family member with post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, after all, we are a Marine and Naval town. What do you do as a clinical psychologist to get someone with post-traumatic stress disorder to sleep? I mean, does this involve medications? Is it behavioral? Is it a combination of the two? You know, what's the secret sauce?
Well, probably the most important thing is to recognize that you have a problem. Often a person really finds it difficult to come to grips with that. Family members are impacted and often are the ones that motivate a person to come in. But what you would do is to evaluate a person to really see the different kinds of things that are going on. Often there are pain problems. In some instances, there may be traumatic brain injury issues, so that you want to consult and refer for other disciplines as needed, so that when you're providing your treatment, it will be most effective. Because the more effective combined or coordinated medical management you can get overall, the more effective your treatment's going to be. So that's going to be specific also for PTSD. The treatments for stress generally, as well as PTSD, include prolonged exposure, of which I was the first DOD and VA consultant in the country. Secondly, there's something called cognitive processing therapy, which is also comes out of rape victims. There's cognitive behavioral treatment more generally. And it is the cognitive behavioral treatment for sleep that is utilized more specifically to address the sleep problems. Sometimes this is done in terms of working in a group. If you're at a medical institution, you have more of an opportunity for folks to work in group. What's important about working in a group, of course, is that you can use the resources of other people to work as a from a team approach or a buddy system, so people are helping each other to learn the principles of sleep treatment. On the other hand, if you're not an institution, you're just out in the community, having family members who are on board and educated to some of these problems is something that you would want to include in the treatment approach. You might bring in a family member, in other words, to discuss some of the issues and work together. So it's normalized. You have a sense of what's going on. You have the support of family members where possible to really help the treatment to be more successful.
So what exactly would an example of cognitive therapy be?
Yeah, good question.
Well, cognitive therapy deals with feelings and thoughts, at least the cognitive component does, that may disrupt going to sleep or staying asleep or waking up early. It includes education to different sleep habits that can dysregulate sleep. For example, taking caffeine after 12 o'clock might, since it takes a while to get out of your system, keep a person awake.
Being pregnant might late. Keep a person
sure.
awake.
Sure.
I'm just realizing there's going to the bathroom.
Well, your hormones are changing. We're talking about hormones. Your hormones are going to be changing in a big way.
Thanks.
But it also involves not using the bed, for example, or being in bed to eat, watch television, or read, but associating the bed as much as you can, and this is where the behavioral part comes in, to be asleep as much as you can during the time that you're in the bed. And to also set up a pre-sleep routine so that you can deactivate from your day and get into a slower heart rate, slower breathing rate, slower mindset in terms of approaching your attempts to go to sleep.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Dr. Emder, I don't know if you remember, on our very, very first show, that was just you and me, you brought that up. You said part of, you know, issues in sleep is that we use the bed for other things,
absolutely.
Like we'll watch TV.
Right.
And ever since then, which has been like almost a year ago now, at home, we've decided not to do those things. So we don't watch TV in bed. We might read for like 5 or 10 minutes, but, right. you know, that's very rare as well. We usually do that downstairs. So really trying to, I mean, Dr. Slayer, exactly what you're saying. That's,
you know,
I think
if
that's
you think
really
about
important.
Our ancestors going back 300 years, you know, they'd be a lot of, you know, agrarian society, a lot of farmers, you know, the sun would come up, they would crow, and they would go outside and be exposed to the light.
Right. Well,
that light exposure sets your pineal gland for you to start the day. Mm-hmm. Then at the end of the day, they didn't have electricity. Everything got dark. And that was a cue for your hormones to start arising, like your melatonin and your growth hormone. And they would go to sleep. But, you know, fast forward 200 years, you know, we now have our computers and our TV and
we've
we're
got
playing video
weird
games.
Light at us all day. Yeah.
So we have light exposure throughout the day. So just like you said, at the end of the day, I try to dim the lights, turn off the TV. You shouldn't really get on your computer right before you go to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, you should be using the bed, you know, mostly to sleep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So Dr. Slayer, back to, as you're talking about, you know, these therapies being for post-traumatic stress disorder, how do you differentiate? I mean, I would think that somebody that might come back from, say, combat or had an issue, you've got post-traumatic stress disorder, but perhaps they're also very depressed. How do you, you know, differentiate between the two, and are treatments similar?
Well, it is true that stress disorders, which can be both depression and anxiety, of different kinds, of which post-traumatic stress is an anxiety disorder, can co-occur and commonly does co-occur with depression. So if you have a thorough evaluation, part of what your task is to identify the different co-occurring disorders, number one, and then working with the one that is most prominent. And usually with the methods that you use, they overlap. But more specifically, if we're talking about depression, one of the common approaches is called behavioral activation. And the idea there is to do things that are going to activate you. So based on what your baseline is to kind of move things so you can move out physically and socially in the world. So the more you can do that and meet with success, the greater you will be able to induce a more positive mood as opposed to a negative mood like depression or anxiety. So these really regulate the negative kinds of moods. So that's specific to depression. It's specific to other anxiety disorders, including PTSD.
Well, this is a huge area. Why don't we break here? And
I was
going
to say, I got some questions on that one, but we are about ready to head into break. So audience out there, stay right with us. We'll be right back from this message from our sponsors.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Michalski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
The hospital is a place for healing, but what if you're not ready to go home? If your doctor's recommending skilled nursing for extended care, Villa Las Palmas is your next step. From subacute needs to physical and occupational therapy, we handle the highest level of care outside the hospital. With our around-the-clock doctor coverage, you know you're getting the best care possible with a plan to get you stable and back home. Ask your doctor about Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center and let us help you get back to health. For more information, please visit our website, villalaspalmascares.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Aging Redefined and our visit today with Dr. David Sleer and talking about management of insomnia. And as you were mentioning in the last segment, is depression is a huge part of this problem, with 26 million people in the United States alone having issues with depression. So what is depression exactly? How would someone know that they're depressed?
Well, it's, let's see. You know, about 50% of folks who suffer a bout of major depression never seek treatment. So a lot of times you might sense that something's wrong but not realize that you have depression. So that's a really important question.
Yeah. Sure.
But one of the key characteristics is having a dysphoric mood, which means you might feel sad, you might be despairing or hopeless. You might just have a sense of
doom,
feeling empty, being kind of just numbed out or kind of flat. People will have different words to capture that aspect of the mood. Your sense of pleasure about just enjoying a sunset, a smile on a child's face, this sound of birds just tweeping, seeing someone at work just leaves you cold, basically.
I think you talked about several articles in the New York Times that really address this. Do you want to talk on that, on depression and sleep?
You know, I'd be glad to talk about that. There were a couple of articles that came out based on the first of four studies on it, and it's based on really the combination of cognitive behavioral therapy treatment for insomnia, which is the sleep treatment. So it's a talk, sleep, and non-medication, and treatment for depression. And it's what it shows is that about 87% of folks who resolve their insomnia also go on to resolve the depression. So it actually doubles the effectiveness of the treatment for depression, including or in addition to treating successfully the insomnia. And when we use medications for the treatment of depression, they're only slightly better. For example, a drug like Prozac, then placebo, and so you really multiply the effect by addressing both sleep, which is under evaluated and under treated for depression, and you wanted to ask a question.
I do have a question.
Yeah,
I'm just slightly confused because when I think of somebody being depressed, I think about them being in bed asleep all day. So doesn't that kind of go hand in hand, or you know, do most people that have depression have sleeping problems, or is it because they're sleeping during the day, they can't sleep at night? Is that related?
Well, I think you're giving an example of a more extreme symptom of depression. And you can think of depression as a spectrum from mild to moderate and severe symptoms. So usually what's characteristic for depression in, let's say, at least 50% or more of individuals is that they will have a significant sleep problem where their sleep is disrupted. They may have difficulty getting to sleep, staying asleep, or waking up early. They may sleep lightly. It may be fragmented. It's what you would call non-restorative sleep. You feel empty when you wake up.
Right.
You can feel more irritable, which is another characteristic of depression. Your focus, your concentration is diminished, so that your ability to problem solve, your ability to socially problem solve when it comes to being with other people at work and your family, is you're less effective, you're less involved, you're more withdrawn. So it's reinforcing of the depression. And the more you're depressed, the more likely you are to exercise less, to eat in some way that will cause you to gain weight. And so these also can be symptoms of depression that are part and parcel of a sleep problem.
Okay. So, okay, if we look at this kind of backwards, say somebody doesn't quite have depression, but now they do have insomnia. Can insomnia lead to that?
You know, it's a great
question. I think the answer is yes. I think if you have insomnia and you're not getting sleep, I think you're putting yourself at risk for depression and probably post-traumatic stress issues.
Well, you absolutely do. It doubles your risk of depression.
Right.
You know, just having the insomnia by itself, and a lot of times you can actually have a clinically significant insomnia but not realize it. You know, you have some kind of sleep problem, so you really don't go in for treatment. So it's very important to have that evaluated and treated.
Can we touch on that for a second? What exactly is insomnia? Because my mom has some serious sleeping issues, and come 8 o'clock, she has to take sleeping pills or she doesn't fall asleep. And then I, you know, see her in the morning and she's like, I was up till 4 o'clock. And I'm like, Mom, there's got to be something else you can do besides rely on these pills. And she's like, no, I just don't sleep. So what classifies as insomnia, where you need to look at somebody and I need to go to my mom and say, we need to do something about this?
Well,
it's
a wonderful question. And it's what these studies are really indicating is that it's important to screen and evaluate for insomnia because of the problems that it can cause. But in terms of what it is, one thing is that if you're having a difficulty of not being able to go to sleep when you put your head down on the pillow, and hopefully you're doing that at a time when you have some sleepiness, so you're ready to go to sleep, where it's 30 minutes or more. Some folks, of course, it's 45 to 90 minutes. Some folks, it's even several hours before they're able to go to sleep. And then when they do go to sleep, they wake up in the middle of the night, maybe several times for 30 minutes, 45 minutes or more. So you have that fragmented sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then even after you are through most of the night, you still may wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and not be able to go back to sleep. So you have middle, late, and early insomnia, right? Your sleep is light and fragmented. And it will impact how you feel about yourself, including irritable mood, concentration, memory, productivity. It will also affect how you are at work and at home. So it impacts your day-to-day functioning. That's what insomnia is, when you have significant impairment in your day-to-day functioning as a result of fragmented sleep. Or as you were saying earlier, you have individuals who sleep excessively and have excessive daytime sleepiness. So there's different ways that we can see insomnia manifested.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
So for our audience, you know, let's say they recognize, you know, I have a sleep problem, or their loved one has a sleep problem. Who should they go see? Should they see their primary care physician? Should they see their psychiatrist? Should they see a sleep specialist?
It depends what their insurance is. If they have a PPO, come on, doctor.
Okay, let's say you have unlimited funds like Kendra, and you can go to whoever you want to go to.
Oh, goodness.
Who should she go to?
Well, It depends on who you have access to, where you're where you live, but here in San Diego, we're fortunate to have a board certified behavioral sleep specialist, which the study has recommended, and who they specifically say are trained to provide the cognitive behavioral treatment as well as the treatment for depression. But clearly, if you do not have access to that high level, an individual, you would still go to your primary care physician.
So they're trained to deal with a lot of these issues?
They're trained to screen for it.
Okay.
But they're not aware of these new studies which show that both the insomnia and depression can co-occur commonly, that it increases the risk for depression twice as much. Or to really refer to board-certified behavioral sleep specialists who are specifically, you know, trained to do this. So it's a coordination of care,
okay,
which is important.
So if somebody determines that they're not sleeping properly and decides, I have a PPO insurance plan, I'm going straight to Dr. Slear, what is the process? When they walk into your office, what do you do?
Well, first they're going to call 619-992-7393.
Perfect. Okay. We'll give that number out at the end of the show.
Sleep,
we will.
Because sleep busters.
Because that's probably the most important thing.
And we'll say that. We'll repeat it again.
Because I will answer your call and I'll speak to you. And we'll check out and see if your insurance covers me as a provider. And you know what? If it doesn't, I'm going to help you to get the help that you need in terms of whatever the treatment is that you might need. But what you would do is you would come into the office like you would for any other healthcare provider. In this case, I'm a behavioral health medicine provider. Receive a complete evaluation, because we want to know whether there are any underlying medical conditions that might be maintaining or contributing to some of the issues, finding out what your history with the problem is, what other treatments you may have in the past utilized, or you yourself personally utilized. But you get an evaluation, basically, and then you discuss treatment. You have a treatment plan with goals, and you kind of go from there. It's basically about eight sessions in a traditional format for, so it's inexpensive, it's brief in terms of the sleep treatment, and you kind of go from there. If it's just sleep, obviously you're going to treat both if it's sleep and depression.
So it's basically just you're having a conversation. When I think about, you know, sleep therapy, I picture you're going into a room with a bed and you're being watched.
Yeah,
what your sleeping patterns are. Is that, do you do anything like that?
Or why didn't we save that for the next segment? Because my question was, when do you actually send someone for a sleep study to look for some of these other causes?
Right. Okay. Well, so don't ask your question. We gotta wait. Hold
on. I know, because we're running out of time.
I know. Okay, audience out there, stay right with us. We'll be back.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, villalaspalmascares.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. We are talking to Dr. David Slear about insomnia and depression and all sorts of things. And I've got tons of questions, but Dr. Emder, you kind of trumped me. You had
right.
a question right at the end.
You know, there's something called polysomnography or sleep studies where you can both do them at home and you can do them in a sleep lab where they hook you up and monitor your brain waves. They monitor your respirations, your oxygen levels, and they can actually study all your different four phases of sleep. So the question is, when does someone with insomnia need a referral to have an actual sleep study?
Well, someone who would be evaluated by a board-certified behavioral sleep medicine provider like myself would do a complete evaluation. And the evaluation always would include a screening for potential sleep disorders like sleep apnea, mm-hmm. like periodic limb movement disorder, restless leg disorder. Certainly, many of our members of our community who are overweight, and 70% of all adult Americans are considered overweight, 35% are considered obese, mm-hmm. You have a common co-occurrence with sleep apnea. And some of the signs of that would include excessive daytime sleepiness and fatigue, difficulty breathing, snoring, headaches, dry mouth, and so forth. So in my evaluations, clearly that's part of the screening protocol and clinical interview to better determine the need for consultation and referral. That'll answer your question, I think.
Okay. So, what was I going to say to you? What are some things that you would recommend, maybe if we have listeners at home that are struggling to sleep, are there any tips that you could give them to maybe, you know, kick it into gear or try a few things? And then if it's not working, obviously, you know, reach out.
Well, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, I think, has some good educational material. So a authoritative websites, I think, even WebMD is a place to get some general educational information. But what you're talking about is behavioral regulation in terms, for example, of setting up a pre-sleep routine so mm-hmm. that you dim the lights, just like Larry was talking about mm-hmm. just a moment ago, slowing things down, doing something that's relaxing and enjoyable. Sometimes folks enjoy taking a warm shower before they go to bed because that will your body temperature will lower when you come out of warm shower, and that's more conducive for sleeping. You know, some milk, something like that. A exercise routine that you can tolerate is helpful in terms of regulation during the day, which will build up that sleep pressure so that you're not taking naps, for example. You're getting up at a set time is particularly helpful. And remembering to basically use the bed for sleeping. If you're not able to sleep after maybe 15, 20 minutes, what you might do is go into another room, making sure that the lighting is sufficient so that you see where you're going, and do something that's relaxing. That could be reading a book, not something that's causing you concern, listening to music, and waiting until you're really drowsy, dropping off, and then go back to sleep. So those are a couple of things.
What about like meditation? Have you ever worked with anything like that, or do you recommend those things?
I'm actually familiar with. I'm trained in about six or seven different therapeutic approaches. Certainly trained in those traditions. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about generally is something called a mindfulness training, which is basically a breathing awareness.
Right.
Okay. And
it's
a lot of
very hard to do. If anyone's ever really tried it, just to focus on your breath, right?
Well, of course. But we do that because it also relates to heart rate variability, and we are in more optimized states of heart rate variability, sometimes like when we exercise, mm-hmm. we might be, and it depends on the activity. But what you're doing is you are just paying attention to just breathing in and out, for example, through your nose, if you're able to do that. Maybe closing your eyes so you can focus more on your body, mm-hmm. finding a place that's relaxing and quiet, you know, to do it. And just letting that happen, maybe doing heart breathing. So you're focusing your awareness on your heart. And you can just, using imagery, just imagine that you're just breathing from that center of your core of your body, just mm-hmm. breathing in and out. You can try that for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And if you do, what you'll notice is that your heart rate is going to get slower. You're going to breathe more slowly. That's going to increase the oxygenation. It's going to relax the muscles. And so that is a piece of the mindfulness practice.
Just trying to figure out what to tell my mother.
So interestingly, in the Wall Street Journal this Tuesday, had an article from the Cranky Consumer. It was entitled Trouble Falling Asleep, Ways to Wind Down Faster. Mm-hmm. And they talked about four programs of which are readily available. One of them is actually an iPhone app, which uses hypnotherapy for $2.99.
No kidding.
There's another one, Brainwave Music Systems, a little bit pricier at $30.99, which uses CDs where they talk to you to get you to relax. And I think, you know, you can buy waves generating sound machines.
Right.
So what do you think about these sleep aids as a way to help get asleep?
You know, it's amazing. There's, I think, basically a lot of good stuff out there so that if you try something, see if it helps you. And if it helps you, I think you're fine. But if it doesn't, then look for something that's perhaps a little bit more scientifically based, evidence-based, and go from there. But the examples you mentioned, there's some wonderful different kinds of actually sleep tapes that seem to help a lot of folks. There's books that you can buy, you know, on this. And just talking with maybe a friend or family member who may have had a sleep problem and actually did something that worked for them and sharing that and having a conversation so that you actually begin to think about, well, maybe I could do this or maybe I could do something else, just like what we're doing here right now in terms of like troubleshooting. It just gets you more involved with knowing that sleep's important and you want to figure out how to get to some of the important pieces.
So knowing that sleep is important, can good sleeping patterns or habits be learned? Can you train your body to do them? I mean, obviously, we're saying yes to this, right? Because you have a lot of scientific methods for that. But I'm using this from a selfish perspective because I'm about to introduce a child into this world that doesn't know how to sleep. And
your sleep days are going to end very shortly.
Yeah. I just want to make sure like there's going to be hope at the end of this tunnel.
You know, I've worked, I think, with thousands of folks, and I love this work. And my patients have really taught me how to help someone relearn to better regulate their sleep, which is what you're talking mm-hmm. about, which is how you think about sleep and what you do or don't do about sleep. That's the behavioral part.
Right.
You know, the answer is overwhelmingly yes. Overwhelmingly,
fantastic
yes.
News.
I mean, that's you need someone who's competent is really the critical thing, who's motivated and has been around the block in terms of working with sleep. And the fact is that when you have someone like that and you have a, you know, typical but clinically significant sleep problem, 75-80% of folks can readjust or re-regulate their sleep. And it's very important to start as a child. That's where sleep problems begin.
Could you give me a couple tips on the air? I know this is aging redefined, but as far as, you know, maybe there are people out there that have kids that are kind of curious about this. Are there any tips that you can
I think
give
the
me?
Biggest tip that I can give you is to speak and start at the beginning with your pediatrician, who can actually guide you with good sleep patterns to promote with your child, because there are a number of things. There's two prominent sleep experts, Joni Mendel, and I'm trying to think of my other colleague, who've written some nice books on working with children with sleep, and so I would recommend her.
Interesting.
And
okay,
her book.
I'll have to dig some information up. I know it can be very difficult with kids these days because of the video games and that type of thing. So I'm just gonna, you know, hopefully start the sleeping process very early.
Well, actually, being a grandfather times three.
Yeah.
And,
I should be asking you.
Having a granddaughter who's an ENT surgeon in very type A, she got a book that's actually out of print now, I think called The English Nanny. And what she had recommended was having the babies on a very tight schedule.
Yes.
And have them sleeping at a certain time, waking them up, having them sleep a certain time, wrapping them very tightly with a papoose or whatever they call it. And her babies, right from the beginning, are excellent sleepers.
So, awesome. Yeah, I just read a book, too, called Bringing Up Bebe, and it's like a French-style parenting, but it talks a lot about that. One thing that was interesting, and Dr. Slayer, maybe you could speak on this, but though we have 30 seconds left, we sleep in segments of, like, 2 hours. Our sleep, like... patterns or what you call it, you know, we sleep for 2 hours and then we wake up and then we kick back into our next cycle, but we do that automatically, whereas babies don't know how to do that. So they wake up crying, whereas you just kind of teach them to fall back asleep.
That's what this book was all about.
Yeah, so fascinating.
So we have very little time. So Dr. Slayer is located in the East County in La Mesa.
In La Mesa.
And do you want to give us your office address?
Well, my office address is 4700 Spring Street, Suite 306, and the phone number is 619-992-7393. So that's 619-992-7393.
And I'm DrLarryEmder.com on the web. And
yeah, absolutely. And we've got a Facebook page, everybody. So feel free to jump on that, Aging Redefined Radio. You can also have access to all of our podcasts, which you can download at any time, hear the show anytime it's convenient for you, or any of our others as well. And feel free to send us a message if you've got questions or have a topic you'd like us to discuss. We'll definitely do that for you. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.